Hello and welcome to A Star of Spoilers off-season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and if I could save one dinosaur from the exploding Isla Nublar, I would save the Sinoceratops. It's like a Triceratops, but it's got those two cool little holes. You know, it's like head shields. It just looks visually appealing, and it's an herbivore, which is important if you're going to save something, I feel.
Okay, I didn't understand the prompt because I just neglected to read it. And Dave just shouted at me, "Joanna, choose a dinosaur," and that's all I responded to. So I thought we were picking like what dinosaur we would be. So I'm going to answer a different question. And the reason I have to stick with my answer is because Neil needs it for his answer. So I decided that if I were a dinosaur in Jurassic World, the Fallen Kingdom, I would be the Indoraptor, which is the new hybrid one that is like super murdery and has that smirk and it looks kind of crazy.
So wait, you picked that as a self-identifying dinosaur?
Yeah. Yeah. Mostly for that part where it smirks.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
It's like playing dead smirk.
Yeah, the playing dead smirk. That's me. I saw myself in that monster. Neil.
Yes, hello.
If you were to answer a third completely different prompt, because like my answer doesn't work because that Indoraptor was never on the exploding island. So
that's true.
I did not read the prompt. But anyway,
you'd be the Indoraptor, like the leg bone that they took. My joke answer was that I want to be an outdoor raptor to go with the Indoraptor.
Which is why I couldn't change. I couldn't change my answer.
I have a real answer to the real prompt, which is that I would save the Brontosaurus, otherwise known as the Thunder Lizard, because you could actually probably keep one of those as a pet if you lived on like a big ranch with like large trees, and that would be a pretty cool dinosaur to keep as a pet.
Yeah,
because people are like, my cute dog. I'd be like, my Brontosaurus selfie.
Thank you, Neil, for answering the prompt. This week on Star Wars Spoilers, we're...
Oh, wait a second. Hold on. Hold on. You have to wait. Talk amongst yourselves. Neil, stall for time because my answer is going to be good. Hold on.
Oh, okay. Other things I would want to do with my Brontosaurus. You could probably ride a Brontosaurus.
Yes.
You can't ride very many dinosaurs. Like, I don't know if you could ride the Sinoceratops. I don't think they're... You know,
well, you couldn't see where you were going unless you were peeking through one of the little holes.
Right. Other benefits to having a Brontosaurus is that it would be very hard to get killed by your Brontosaurus.
That's maybe true.
Well,
my answer.
Go ahead.
Is that I would save, obviously, the deep underwater Mosasaurus. Just Mosasaurus, I looked it up, just to mess with Dave because he's giving me too much salt right now.
Nice. So, I got it.
The nightmare of Dave's headcanon is what I would say.
About nightmare it. Fish. Joanna would be like, come on over and swim in my giant pool, Dave.
Yeah. If Dave, you have a pool that size, can I live with you before you feed me to the Mosasaurus? This week we're talking about Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, and... Jurassic Park, The Lost World. We're going to do the older movie first and then the newer movie second, in case some of you are spoiler-averse and chose not to give this fifth trip to Isla Nublar or Isla Sorna, whatever, fucking Jurassic Island, a try.
The five muertes.
The five muertes, yes. If you did not stick in for the fifth muertes, then, I'm sorry, guys. It's a Gonzalez. I have to just pause and apologize for that. Okay. If you didn't tune in for Jurassic World, The Fallen Kingdom, that's going to be our second segment. You could save it for later. But first, as always, we have Joanna with reviews.
Oh, hi. Okay. So we've got a couple reviews, and I'm sorry for the length of this, but I'm going to do both of them. The first one is from an old school Pajibin, Melbiv DeVoe. I recognize that handle. I know that lovely lady. 5 stars, pop culture perfection. If you're looking for the perfect pop culture podcast, look no further. This trio's discussion of all things Game of Thrones are highly enjoyable as each season unfolds, and the off-season tour keeps us coming back for more as we wait for the final season to finally arrive. They cover such a wide range of topics in the off-season that even if one episode touches on something I have no interest in, I know that next week will bring me back. I'm going to take that as like a sly Tremors dig. Okay, my husband and I love to listen together. We recently went on a road trip and backlogged several episodes of A Storm of Spoilers for the ride, and the hours flew by as we listened and laughed along. It truly felt like riding with friends, and really, what more could you want from a podcast? So thanks, Joanna, Neil, and Dave, for the hours of entertainment you've given us. Can't wait to hear what you've got for us next. P.S. I've already fallen down, but my husband is not. And may the rest of you stay strong and upright for the rest of 2018. Okay. And the reason I'm doing another long one is for reasons you will just soon find out in a second. Okay. This is from Hermione Granger, is my girlfriend, 5 stars, living for the crazy Game of Thrones theory. She says, or he, I, whoever, this person says, I live in Atlanta, but I have no discernible Southern accent. But Joanna, if you read this, please go as accent heavy as your little heart desires. I honestly, Neil, you need to mute your mic like Dave does so you don't distract me with your story. I honestly can't believe I've never written a review before. This podcast is incredible. I came for the Game of Thrones and I've stayed for all the fun they bring to pop culture discussions in general. They're insightful and intentioned contributors with great chemistry and love for one another. Dave is a great producer, facilitator, all of the above. Neil has such a love for wild theories and for his co-hosts, and Joanna is a freaking queen. I love that they'll be discussing the topic and I'll be in my car like, but you cannot mention X problematic thing, and then she brings it up. It makes you feel so good and seen and heard to have people who love what you love and think as thoughtfully as you do about material and to come away with something new. I love these three and their work, and I'm glad to have the Slack access now. P.S. I'm super clumsy, but took the Don't Fall Down challenge so seriously. So then in May, when I had a bit too much scotch and tripped walking down a sidewalk, I was so sad that I kept telling my partner that I had really not wanted to fall, and she thought I was crazy. Anyway, hashtag I fell down and apparently broke my foot. First bone ever at the same time. If you're going to do something, do it right, I guess. Okay, at the end of that torment. You're welcome.
Facilitator.
I just love that my brand is that I love theories and like you guys.
Neil puts up with us, but loves the theories. Thank you so much for that review and that reason for Joanna to spend that much time just like dripping with Southern accent. It was fantastic.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've watched Steel Magnolias, so it's good to catch up.
Shelby, drink your juice, Shelby.
Next up, we got Neil, who, as we want to clarify something, although we are running a Patreon, if there is something super Game of Thronesy that happens, we will let you know.
Yeah, we've been getting that question on the Twitter.
Yeah.
And good clarity there, Dave.
Because Neil...
I agree with that.
Neil used to, you know, catch us up with, we've been talking about this already, which would usually include, like, tidbits about Game of Thrones. There was a wedding that had nothing to do with Game of Thrones, but had a lot of Game of Thrones pictures involved in it. That sort of stuff, not on the podcast anymore. Now we have storm chasing, but if there's anything huge that happens, absolutely we'll let you know. There's no paywall to Game of Thrones information. We're still Storm of Spoilers. Right.
Yes, as keen observers of our podcast would note, we talked at length about the spinoff news on the mailbag. So that was, we squeezed it in there.
Yeah, we are up to date. And so now we have Neil. Cue the lightning.
Yes. So this is Storm Chasing. So we'd like to talk about one pop culture storm that you're chasing this week. Movie, book, show, story, podcast, etc. Mine this week starts with a story about our Patreon. So as you guys know, I wasn't here last week because of back spasms that forced me to be laying down a lot. And it's hard to podcast when you're laying down. It's also hard to podcast when you're on a lot of pain medication. So it would have gotten so weird. So it's for the best. But as you will note, if you are a member of the Patreon and you're in the Slack, there was a point where we have a channel for the latest storm where I was going to start live blogging my experience of listening to last week's podcast, and I got like 9 minutes in and I had to pause because I discovered that there is a show on Netflix called Cooking on High, which is basically Chopped, but everyone's stoned. And it's all about cooking with weed. So I was like, I'm sorry. Love Dave and Joanna. I like them for sure. But I was like, I gotta...
It's your brand.
I gotta watch this show. Something was drawing me to that show. So I would like to tell you guys about it for a moment. It's a really interesting show. So have you both watched Chopped?
Yes.
No.
Okay. So the idea, it's a cooking competition show where it's like two... on Chopped, it's four chefs and they have mystery ingredients and they have to make something good out of it. And then they're judged. So... The way that this Cooking on High show is different is that the secret ingredient is always weed. So it's not a secret at all. And they bring in these chefs who know how to cook with weed. And they basically give them like a theme. Like it's like sandwiches. So they have to make a sandwich or like, you know, barbecue. There's a few thoughts. One, there is a guy on this show. His name is Ungayo. He is a sommelier of the good flour. He's the most interesting dude I've ever seen in a television show. I'm pretty sure that this entire show came about by some producer going to this dude to buy weed and being like, I need to make a TV show out of this guy, but I don't know what kind of show. So he's just like, Ungayo, what kind of TV shows do you like? And Ungayo said, I love Chopped. So they're like, cool, we'll just make a Chopped show around you. I'm also convinced that all of the celebrities on this show who are the judges are absolutely fake. I've never looked any of them up on Twitter. I've never Google searched any of them, but every single one of them seems fake. Like they're all like my theory is that the producer of this show, whoever created it, spent all their money, the show's production money, on like the weed and the food and the kitchen set and was like, shit, we didn't book any guests. So they just went through their apartment complex in LA and like knocked on the doors of everybody they know who gets high and is like, hey, you're kind of a comedian, right? All right, cool. Come on, you're a comedian. And hey, you're kind of a musician, right? Come on, you could be a famous musician for this show. So all the celebrities are fake as far as I'm concerned. I haven't seen anyone that I've recognized yet.
I do like Ungayo Bilum. I know him from Doug Benson's podcast.
Yeah, Ungayo is amazing. The rest of the show, it's kind of trashy. It's kind of bad. The guests, the celebrity guests are terrible. Like, they're not even good fake celebrities. And but it's like 13 minutes an episode.
How many celebrity guests are there?
I don't know. There's two per episode.
All right, Neil, let's get on Cooking on High season two. It seems like the bar is low for a judgment, and I feel like we could be very on brand with this.
Yeah.
So like, hey.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Hey, Netflix listener that works at Netflix, we know you're here. Make that happen.
Right. Well, I'm like, I'm more famous than any of these people. And I'm not more famous than hardly anyone.
Well, you're not that far off in how you cast like a pilot episode of a competition series.
Right.
I definitely believe you when you say that, which just makes me think that we should do it. There should be
a Storm of Spoilers episode of Cooking on High where the three of us go.
Mm-hmm. Burgers, and tacos, and pizza plus weed.
Just delicious. Well, and it's like gourmet. Like, these are like real chefs. It's like gourmet food with weed in it. So I'm like, hell yeah. So that's going to be our new quest.
To be judges on Cooking on High.
To be celebrity judges on Cooking on High on Netflix. Their ratings would soar.
With that plea, I'm going to take over. I've been playing Fortnite. It is the Battle Royale video game. It's part shooter, part Minecraft, I guess would be the best way to describe it. Came out like a year ago. Now it's goddamn huge. I believe it's I was trying to talk to Patches about how Matt Patches, entertainment editor at Polygon, about how to describe how big Fortnite's audience is. And he's like, it's well over the watching size of The Walking Dead from week to week. If you just want to like picture that. that's how many users are constantly at some point using Fortnite. You queue in using your free app on your Xbox, PlayStation, PC. You can even get it on your phone now. You get dropped onto an island, not like a lost island, though. There's like buildings and structures. Inside those buildings and structures, there are guns. You could also destroy those buildings and structures, chop down trees and destroy rocks to get building materials. The reason this is so fitting for storm chasing is there's a closing eye of combat called the storm. Basically, you take damage in this storm area, and it's constantly shrinking to force you into combat with the other, I believe, in every single scenario of the game, there's 99 other people on the island with you. So it's just a whole big clusterfuck that I've been dipping my toes into, and mostly in the Dave Gonzalez way, I am interested in the mechanics of the game and how they lead to strategy. So I die a lot, but I've been having a lot of fun watching people of all skill levels play this free Fortnite game. Have either of you managed to give it a try in like the year it's been out and popular?
Well, I want you to guess what my answer is.
Joanna is one of the people who spends on
Joanna's
average
ranked
$89
third in the world.
Yeah, on Fortnite.
In Fortnite.
I would actually love if that were true.
But Joanna, one of the characters is called Social Justice Warrior. So you can play as
obviously
Social Justice. They shoot words at you. I have not played this yet, but I was tempted to the other day. I actually heard a couple of friends talking about it, and I was like, this sounds interesting. But now I can't get the whole, since you mentioned that there is building and shooting involved, I can't get Rick and Morty out of my head. So what you're telling me is this is a game where you shoot stuff to build with, and then you build stuff to shoot with. Yep. Is that true?
I mean, you can't build stuff to shoot with, but essentially, yes. There's building and shooting. And it's reached peak, battle royale gaming. It's sort of like riffing off of PUBG, which is like the predecessor to Fortnite. But yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting, weird little game. Like I said, it's free on all those platforms. You just queue in. You could buy stuff to make yourself look different, but it doesn't give you a competitive advantage. So as soon as you
That's interesting.
Yeah, as soon as you download it, you're as much as you want to put into the game strategy-wise is how much you get out, which is how it hooked me. I don't need like a first-person shooter in my life, or anything with microphones is horrible to me. But I do like this because it's different.
That actually would explain its popularity, because I know there are a lot of games out there where, you know, these freemium games on your phone where it's like you pay. If you buy stuff, you get a competitive advantage.
Right.
So maybe that's why people like it, because, you know, if you buy stuff just for vanity purposes, then that's fine. But you can just play if you want.
Yeah. And then I saw an article today that apparently the average Fortnite user spends $89 anyway. So Fortnite is super popular and it's going to be around for a while. It's might be a Pokemon Go like summer for Fortnite. Who knows? Come join me, find out.
Have you played are you still playing the Jurassic Worlds Pokemon game?
I am.
I downloaded it and then I pulled my back muscles, so I couldn't walk around. So I might get into it this week.
Joanna.
Yes.
What's your storm this week?
Oh. So
is it Fortnite?
This is isn't. We are over on the Slack, Storm Spoiler Slack, and I promise to not only talk about the Slack on here, but if you sign up for our Patreon, you get to be part of our Slack. And if you are part of the Patreon, you also get to be part of this book club I'm doing. And we are voting. I just want to do like a shout out PSA that we are voting right now on the July book. For June, we read Sharp Objects by Gillian Flynn. And it was really, really good and fun to read that with other people. Even if Dave figured out the twist super early because he's a freak.
Hey.
In a good way. Like freakishly smart. That's what I meant. Like House.
Things worked out great for House, right?
Yes. Not at all damaged. All versions of that character, totally.
He's
fine.
Like the House of Pop Culture, only everything's a loophole instead of lupus.
It's never lupus.
Oh, there was a delay on the punchline. I was like, oh, no.
And then it's only lupus once in the entire show.
But we, Yeah, so we're voting right now on what our July pick is going to be, and we're voting between, we're picking books that are being turned into film or television, and I haven't decided if I'm going to call the book club Smug Book Readers or The Book Was Better. Those are the two names that I'm like still working on. But right now, it's just Joanna's Book Club, and we are reading either Crazy Rich Asians, The Meg, Black Klansman, I'm doing this from memory, The Little Stranger, Papillon, or fuck, what was the last one? Oh, Clear and Present Danger. Yeah, Clear and Present Danger. And these are all being turned into either, I mean, Clear and Present Danger sort of is becoming a Jack Ryan TV show, but these are all being turned into films that are coming out in August. So like you read the book in July with us, and then like when August comes around and you see Crazy Rich Asians or Little Stranger or whatever in the theaters, you go, well, actually in the book, you know, like blah, blah, blah. So yeah. Anyway, so that's what we're doing, and I'm really excited. So if you join the Patreon, you can be part of the book club, which is really, really fun. And if you do it before Sunday, you can vote on what the July book is. So do that.
I would like to state my vote here on the podcast because I think it's important. We really need to read The Meg.
That's also what I voted for, if that makes
sense. We really need to read The Giant Shark book for so many reasons. I'm going to give you two of them. One, I think it's fun. Two, it's a potential to get really weird with Dave because we all know what his greatest fear is. So I want to know if that can manifest through reading a book. So let's do it. Let's do it. Come on. Crazy Rich Asians sounds fun too, but let's do the shark one.
This first segment, we did something a little different. If you join our Patreon at patreon.com/stormspoilers and get in at the small council level, it's the highest level. It's the most extremely supreme level. Does that sound too presidential or just presidential enough? you get to vote on a movie that we watch every month and then watch the movie along with us and then, you know, listen to the podcast like everybody else. If you don't want to join the Patreon, you still get to hear about the movie. Because we're a pop culture podcast and we watch at least one movie a month. But this is sort of a better way we found instead of doing a like huge mailbag poll to narrow down some of the things that we haven't seen or need to see again and get to share it with you. And we had a great time last Tuesday watching Jurassic Park, The Lost World. And we're going to talk about it because we have to refresh ourselves about the world of Jurassic Park. It's been 5 movies. Just like in the MCU, you gotta refresh every time you get a new installment so you catch all the references and the Easter eggs and you have a great time with it. And you're like, where is it going? That was on everybody's mind after the hit Jurassic Park in 1993. Where is this gonna go? Steven Spielberg asked Michael Crichton to help out. Michael Crichton wrote a novel called The Lost World. It's different. Because it had to use, with the exception of Ian Malcolm, who was resurrected, the surviving characters from Jurassic Park into the Lost World. So there's no Hammond in the book. There's no Tim and Lex in the book. There's no Ian Malcolm's daughter in the book, unlike in the movie. There's 2 unrelated research assistant children. Steven Spielberg was like, thank you very much for the majority of your work here. I'm going to take the T-Rex nest stuff and the high hide, and I'm going to make my own movie. And what we got was 1997's The Lost World, Jurassic Park, where Ian Malcolm has to go to Site B, Isla Sorna. What does that mean, Joanna?
Sarcasm Island.
To Sarcasm Island.
Not joking.
Never accuse Spielberg of being dull.
Rescue his girlfriend, Sarah Harding, Julianne Moore, who has gone on behalf of John Hammond to photograph the living dinosaurs of Isla Sorna so that public opinion can be swayed to keep these magnificent beasts in like a nature preserve of this Site B island where somebody's planted a whole bunch of soy that provides them with lysine. Yeah, guys, it's been a while.
Wait, that was the explanation for the lysine thing?
Yes.
How did I miss that?
Because Sarah Harding has a whole bunch of techno babble before she touches a dinosaur and just invalidates all of it. A whole bunch of bad science on display in this movie. but it doesn't have, I think, the pacing problems that some Jurassic Park sequels have because it has Steven Spielberg. Although I hadn't watched this movie, I guess, for like 3 or 4 years, however long it's been since Jurassic World, see catch-up monologue earlier in this segment. And I had forgotten how extensively each one of these action set pieces is shot and covered to sort of like draw it out to the maximum tolerable length. I don't think I ever quite got bored with the Lost World set pieces, but there was a lot of time where I'm like, did we need to see him put the car in gear? Did we need to see those people wander into the tall grass before our heroes wandered into the tall grass? Maybe. Maybe we didn't. I don't know. The Lost World is Spielberg excess with dinosaurs, so I can't absolutely hate it. It's just interesting to me how lighthearted it feels after the first Jurassic Park and then the third one, which puts children back in jeopardy. This one has gymnastics instead.
Wait.
Yeah.
You found this lighthearted?
Yeah, I found
it. Jurassic Park?
Yeah. This is like the last time in the series that the dinosaurs are actually treated like animals and not having to be made either monsters or characters, which has become super obvious as the Fallen Kingdom goes on, is that they don't know how to decide what dinosaurs need to be. And I like that.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I liked about the first movie, is the debate about whether or not they should, even though they could, was actually sort of a debate because dinosaurs are amazing. Until, you know, the park goes wrong. You could really be like, yeah, but he's made an educational theme park out of like cloning dinosaurs. This one, as opposed to something like Jurassic World, The Fallen Kingdom, I think actually succeeds in trying to treat the dinosaurs like animals over several story beats. And then so when we get out of it, I don't feel like the male T-Rex is a character necessarily as much as something exhibiting animal behavior, which I feel is like a successful not crossing that line, even though Spielberg's making a monster.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think, and that's something that we'll talk about with Fallen Kingdom as well, where it's like, I have this sort of growing theory that the better Jurassic Park movies are the ones that, you know, where the dinosaurs are animals, but they are also a danger, like a natural danger, and you're rooting for the humans to survive that. And I think that there's a little bit of this sprinkled in Lost World, where it's like there are humans that we root for to die, which feels like a very weird thing, having just rewatched the original Jurassic Park. Like even like Nedry, who is kind of a dick, or the lawyer, who's, you know, a lawyer, like, I don't necessarily think I ever wanted them to die. So, and the bad guy is really, like, John Hammond's kind of the one who is guilty in the first one.
But you don't have anybody abusing the dinosaurs in the first one, which this one sets up really
early. Yeah, and I think The Lost World is probably, like, patient zero for kind of what has gone wrong with every Jurassic Park movie since, which is they try to make characters or weapons or other things out of the dinosaurs other than just being a naturally dangerous thing.
Yeah.
Because at the end of The Lost World, you're kind of rooting for Ludlow to get eaten. Like, for sure rooting for that guy to get eaten. Where it's like, I never had that thought with the original Jurassic Park, which I thought was interesting. Something that sort of dawned on me in rewatching a bunch of these this week.
Joanna, how did you appreciate the Ian Malcolm Spielberg face hybrid that punctuates every emotional beat in this movie?
So I was to prep for this, movie club watch that we did in this episode. I went back and listened to the Blank Check podcast episode covering Lost World because they did this series on Steven Spielberg that I guested on, and I bet they cover the Lost World, and they did. The reason I'm advertising another podcast in our podcast is because I don't want to steal their point without giving them credit. And a really good point that they made that I think is at the crux of my problem with this episode or this movie. And there's a lot of problems with it, but my issue is Ian Malcolm is a great side character. He should not be your main character. That he's like a Han Solo But he should not be your Luke. And not that Luke's a great character, but anyway, but like that you don't take the color character and make him like your hero. It doesn't work. And so, because he doesn't get to be like the weird commentary guy, he has to be like the dad and the boyfriend and the hero and giving, and like it just doesn't work for me. None of it works for me. And I, we talked about this before. I know we've talked about Jurassic Park a million times on this episode, and I almost want to say we talked about, oh no, I think I was on the Slash Film cast when I talked about the first Jurassic World, but I think the thing that makes Jurassic Park a perfect film compared, and it should only have been that film and only that book, in my opinion, but the thing that makes it perfect is the claustrophobia and the terror, despite the fact that it's on a big island, like everything is very closed in actually. So the claustrophobia, the terror, and then just like the human drama, the human fear. And that's obviously something that Spielberg does really well. And it is not here in The Lost World. And it is fleetingly there in Fallen Kingdom. But The Lost World, I hadn't seen it since the theaters, I think. And though I enjoyed watching it with our kids in the Slack, I really, really enjoyed it. It was really funny. This is a fun movie to make fun of, but it's a trash movie, is my opinion. And every Jurassic Park sequel is a trash movie, is my opinion.
Wow.
Except for Jurassic. Yeah. Except for
Jurassic Park. Well, you know what else I think it is that this movie struggles to give us characters who we want to survive, but also who we understand, like, why they're there. So, like, the first movie, it's like, you can understand why all of these people wanted to come and see what this was. And then it goes wrong, and only then are we like, well, shit, I hope everybody learned their lesson. But every sequel, it's like, from the jump, there's several people who are like, we shouldn't do this. This is a terrible idea. And they're right. And no one else listens to them. So then it's just, you're just frustrated. Like, I've never felt frustrated with Alan Grant in the first one. But in, like, this movie, it's like, oh my God, Sarah, give it up. Like, you don't need to take pictures of every damn dinosaur.
just one good picture.
Right. So you end up being sort of, like, frustrated with the characters you're supposed to be rooting for. So it's this weird, like, emotional mix. That said, Lost World's a fun movie. There's some fun, cool, like, cinematic stuff that they did. Some of these action sequences are really fun. I just think that yeah, it's the one thing that creatives in Hollywood will never figure out, which is how to recapture what the magic of that first Jurassic Park. And that to me is what makes it perfect. It's like you'll never be able to do that again. And everything else feels so much worse.
Well, on that note, you can't recapture the first Jurassic Park again.
I like that we all had so much fun doing the Slack watch, and then we just shit on the movie.
Well, I mean,
but that's the best kind of movie to watch with like a bunch of like fun people. Is like,
it is.
A movie you can just like shit talk through.
Because there's some
like,
really dumb stuff
hide.
About it.
Yeah, I don't think like I disliked it as much as I've like it felt like a good movie to rewatch in this summer of aggressively fine movies. Like The Lost World fit right in for me. It's like aggressively fine, but I think even when it came out the first time, I wanted it to be trying to be the first Jurassic Park, which it didn't. And then I saw Jurassic World, which I was okay with. But a lot of people weren't, and apparently that's why
I will
you don't
say
do
this.
A second part.
As someone who is a connoisseur of Jurassic Park related merchandise, The Lost World had the best toy sets.
Ooh, The Lost World did have some good toy sets.
That I was actually going to bring this up.
That was something that came up in the Slack, which I was very proud of.
Well, this is something that I was going to... I learned this word also from Griffin Newman on Blank Check, which is toyetic. This is a thing that studios said at the time, and maybe still do, where they want to, when they want to talk about merchandising their merchandising, they use the word toyetic. So apparently studios will say like, can you make this scene more toyetic, or can you add more toyetic elements? As in, can you add something that we can turn into a toy and sell to people? And that was a conversation around The Last World, you know, that they intentionally merchandise it that way. I mean, the same was true of Jurassic Park. They had like branded dinosaurs, right? Like they sold dinosaurs that had like a JP little like thing on them.
Sure.
But you guys were talking so much in the Slack about the toys, and I was just like, I'm like, I get it, because there's people in that Slack group, and Neil, you're just like a couple years younger than I am, I think, and like, I would say not. I don't like to gender things, but I will say that like, if you were a boy who liked toys,
oh yeah,
when The Lost World came out, I can get why there's like this lingering affection for it. And I certainly have lingering affection for bad movies that I saw when I was like
14,
you know?
Yeah, it was right in the sweet spot for me.
Is 14 the sweet spot?
Yeah.
For boys with toys? Okay. But yeah, so I...
That's totally normal, Joanna.
Okay. All right. But I don't know. I was just kind of like, okay, I can kind of see why this hit a nerve. And like all the people who were in the Slack who had the whole movie memorized were also gents. So once again, not to gender it, because I love the original Jurassic Park. That is for everyone. There might be something like Toy Boy about The Last World that just completely passed me by.
I mean, there are, you know, there are teenage boy movies. That's a thing. And this is like...
Yeah, until we had like Fight Club, we had 2 years of only just basing our life on The Lost World. We're like, listen, we can't bend any blades of grass. We can't let anyone bleed on our jackets. We have to be men.
Right.
And then Fight Club came along and was like, look how the dinosaurs have feminized you. And we were like, oh, yeah. And then we learned a whole bunch of other mistakes.
I think I learned the wrong lessons from Fight Club.
Oh, I definitely learned the wrong lessons from Fight Club. Learning the wrong lessons from Fight Club is what drew me deep enough into film criticism to make me who I am today. So I don't regret it, but I definitely got the wrong lessons from Fight Club. Anyway, off of Fight Club, does anybody have any last nails to put in this Lost World coffin before we try to recapture that Jurassic magic?
Well, I will say, if you don't want to watch Jurassic Park for the millionth time again, which you should, because it's perfect every time. But if you haven't seen Fallen Kingdom yet, and you're for some reason listening to this podcast, and you want to watch a Jurassic Park film to sort of like prep you for it, I think it was Dave's call to do this. I don't remember, but like this was a really good choice because there are some like startling parallels, I think, between this movie and the Fallen Kingdom. And
I will say this.
Yeah.
You know, and this is probably more for the next segment, but Fallen Kingdom is a much better remake of The Lost World than Jurassic World was of the original Jurassic Park. So,
factual, yes. Yes.
And with that, we transition to Fallen Kingdom. Guys, okay, I guess plot. Why not start with plot?
I may have already angered Dave before we started this segment.
Yeah, we pick up 3 years after the events in Jurassic World. Claire has high heels for high heel occasions and boots for boot occasions. She's an animal activist that is trying to save the remaining dinosaurs on Isla Nublar because, surprise, the volcano we've never heard about is super active now and threatening these dinosaurs. Congress is debating whether or not these dinosaurs are actually endangered species. Congress does not rule that they are, which makes Claire very sad. Enter this guy named Lockwood, who used to be a partner of John Hammond back in the early, early getting mosquitoes out of Amber days, who tells Claire that he is building an island called Paradise where he would like to keep the dinosaurs. Would she go and use her handprint to activate the scanners to get the trackers on the dinosaurs and successfully get them off? They would also very much like Blue the Raptor, who is apparently the second smartest being on all the planet Earth. I don't know who the
first is. What's the first?
Yeah. Maybe the Indo, okay. The Indoraptor. Anyway, not important.
Oh.
They would like Blue. So that means that Claire has to go to Chris Pratt, generic hero who is building a cabin in the woods for some
Owen
reason.
Owen Grady, put some respect on his vanilla name.
Why?
You know that whole thing that went around Twitter last week where it was like no one could remember what that dude's name was without looking it up?
Mm.
I had not seen anyone answer it correctly. And only in the Alamo Drafthouse pre-show when they like there was like a parody where it comes up and it says Owen Grady. I was like, oh my God, that's really his name. I had no idea.
Name. So instead of bestowing Chris Pratt with the character this time around, he's instead a sidekick to bring the dinosaur blue to these guys who end up being basically poachers, but not for hunting reasons. They're taking all the dinosaurs back to Lockwood's basement in Northern California, where they plan to auction them for the bargain prices of like $5 million for less than an episode it costs to make a Game of Thrones. They're selling these dinosaurs and the genetic secrets therein to buyers from around the world, the Jurassic World, and blah 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 blah. Some stuff happens, the dinosaurs get loose, and a movie. All right, Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom. For me, very bifurcated, and by not treating the dinosaurs either as animals or monsters, ends up being about absolutely nothing. I could see why this pitch worked in the room. If anybody is vaguely aware of the Jurassic Park 4 script that existed before.
I knew it. I was like, I had a clock on this. I was like, when is Dave going to bring up the... Okay, sorry, go ahead.
That was...
No, of course you have to talk about it. I was just sort of like, as I was watching Fallen Kingdom, I was like, ooh, Dave's going to get a good few minutes out of this, talking about this. All right,
yeah.
Go ahead.
So it basically had a similar plot to the Fallen Kingdom, except the Owen Grady character was hired to go back to Isla Nublar to get the can that Nedry had left, apparently still viable, from Jurassic Park. But it plays out much like the Fallen Kingdom. He goes there and he meets another company of essentially poachers who are taking the dinosaurs away. But then he ends up in like a crazy Swiss Alps mansion where it turns out that they're breeding like this raptor squad of soldiers, and then the rest of the movie is a raptor squad movie. It's weird how Colin Trevorrow, who came up with a storyline for this Jurassic trilogy that we're in the middle of, seems to just be like building us to that point. And I don't think we needed this middle transition movie to get us off the island into Jurassic World so that we could later make the like genetic leap, I think, a little bit more because of a spoiler in this movie that I'm sure we'll get to in a few minutes. Like, it feels like I want to see, like, the weird thing is I like Jurassic World more than everybody else when it came out. I really don't like this, but it does set up a Jurassic World 3 I want to see. And it's like, it's really weird.
No, yes. I feel like we're in this like,
I feel the same way
relationship.
Ugh. And so it feels weird to have seen a movie that is like so much like popcorn that it looks like a whole like Skittle sized piece of thing, but it's mostly popped up nothing. But you know, I guess it is weird summer where like real life makes me want to scream. I can't be too mad at this movie. I just feel like why not be ambitious if you have dinosaurs? Like Jurassic World made enough money that obviously you're going to get a sequel. Great. They do put some practical dinosaurs in here and then add some CGI on top of them, which works better at least than Jurassic World in some cases. The director, Bayona. He does a really good job at translating what I could only picture like very dynamic storyboard moments into shots. I don't think he's really great at staging action or the pacing of that action. But that being said, I'm comparing him to what? Steven Spielberg and Colin Trevorrow. So better than Trevorrow, not as good as Spielberg. Joe Johnston did fine, but should have just done a Rocketeer sequel instead of Jurassic Park 3. Yeah, that's a whole bunch of opinions.
Oh, he did. It was called Captain America, the First Avenger.
Yes, but like a real Rocket. Okay. Well, we still have Baby Rocketeer coming up. I should wait for that.
Just joke. We have jokes sometimes.
Joanna, speaking of jokes, what did you think of this movie?
Okay. Jay Viana, by the way, directed The Orphanage, The Impossible, and A Monster Calls. And I think you can definitely see like a lot of A Monster's Calls in this film. So this is not a good film, by the way, but let me highlight some things that I liked. I liked the little girl. I thought it was a really good, that's a really good kid and really good kid acting. And Jay Viana like has done really good work with children actor, like in all three of his films. So, good guy to tap to do like, you know, you gotta have a kid in Jurassic Park, right? And then there's a shot, you know, I was talking about the like wonder and Dave, I think you were talking about either on here or elsewhere about how like there's that, you know, the okay, so there's the famous Dr. Allegrant, Ellie Sattler see a dinosaur for the first time, sunglasses come off, a meme is born, blah, blah. And then they repeat that in the subsequent sequels. But every time they do it, you're like, yeah, but we've seen the other movies, so this isn't that wondrous to us. So there's a moment like that in this movie, as Dave pointed out elsewhere, that like doesn't work at all. Conversely, though, there is one moment when they're leaving the island, and you see sort of like the island is destroyed. That's not a spoiler, right? Is it?
No, it happens like 20 minutes into the movie.
Okay. And you see sort of the cost of what was left behind, and not everyone manages to land this, but I will tell you right here, right now, Bryce Dallas Howard gives amazing Spielberg face as she's looking back at the island. And that moment actually genuinely touched me in a film that I felt like very cynical about. So I would give both Bryce and the director and the special effects people really good props for that. And then what else did I like about this movie? I did think the practical effects, when there were practical effects on the dinosaurs, I thought those were really good, really cool. And Toby Jones has amazing fake teeth. Those are kind of fun.
Toby Jones, what else Toby I? Jones had a great time shooting some other movie that they cut into Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
Yeah, I don't know what movie he was in. Okay, so the Indoraptor, this has been announced, so I don't think it's a spoiler to say, but the Indoraptor is this like creature that they created for this movie that's genetically modified hybrid of the Indominus Rex from Jurassic World and the Velociraptor. And you see it in all the trailers. It's got the long creepy claws, stuff like that. So here's what I will say. The creepy claws, great. Every shot of the creepy claws, great. There's one scene with the Indoraptor and Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs.
Who's awesome in this movie, by the way. He knows exactly what movie he's in.
Maybe.
He's no Pete Postlethwaite, but he's pretty good.
He's no Ted Raimi. I don't know why I kind of want Ted Raimi in that role. Anyway, Dave is right that I would say all the dinosaurs are too humanoid in this film. And certainly the Indominus, the Indoraptor is, but there's a smirk on that raptor that I mentioned earlier in this episode that I just can't forget. I think it's a great scene, maybe from a different movie, but I really, really enjoyed that moment. And that might be the extent of what I enjoyed in Jurassic World, The Fallen Kingdom. My least favorite part, my roommate Diana, who some of you know, and is listening to me right now record this podcast, when she saw it like a couple hours before me and she texted me, she's like, Joanna, there is the most egregious case of like condescending feminist pandering in this movie. And I just want you to see if you can figure out what it is. I'm going to ask you, gents, as a thought experiment, like, do you know what might have, I identified it right away. Do you know what might have set both Diana and Joanna off in this film?
No.
I feel like it has something to do with Daniela Pineda's character, but I didn't pay that close attention to the movie.
Is she the paleo
veterinarian? Yeah, she's the Zia.
It does, but nothing to do with her. I liked her fine.
But there's like I just remember there's like a weird conversation with like her and Chris Pratt in like when they get to the island and they're like in that little enclosed thing. Am I close?
No, okay. but let me rethink. I'll think back to see if I should be bristling at that scene. But
where she's like, you're with me, muscles. Like, I feel like there was a weird conversation that led up to that.
It's also like her going with them in the end is weird. Anyway, whatever. Point being, they've got her in the back of the truck. She's tending to Blue, and Buffalo Bill, head poacher, like does not like his conversation with her, and he closes the like window and he turns around and goes, "That is one nasty woman."
Oh.
And I'm like, fuck you.
That's one of two Trump references that I caught in the movie. If you look at in the early part when they're talking about Congress, there's like a shot at like the president calling dinosaurs fake news or something.
Right. The president scroll. Doesn't believe that they exist. I noticed that one too.
Yeah, it was weird to see that come up in a Jurassic movie. That has other issues on its mind.
I mean, honestly, The Lost World is a much better immigration metaphor than Fallen Kingdom.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, dinosaurs just want their kids back.
Fallen Kingdom
family separation's bad.
Fallen Kingdom never commits to the debate it's having with itself. Instead, it splits one Ian Malcolm scene in the beginning and the end of the movie and pretends that it's like said something. But
it says nothing. I don't understand what any of his lines mean. I'm like convinced that Jeff Goldblum made up every single thing.
And
he
I feel like
movie.
He's also just telling us what happened, which is
so weird.
Now they're out, and it's like, well, yeah, we just watched that happen.
Listen, I hope that Jeff Goldblum enjoys his boat or whatever it is that he bought with this money.
No, I'm all for Goldblum. Like it could be just he could have read the script for 2 hours. And it would have been probably a little bit better, but
I don't know.
Just as good at the very least.
No, it would have been better. It would have been like ooh, and the claws, and he reaches, she reaches with like a little claw at the sheet, and she pulls it up to her chin, and she's hiding from the dinosaur. Yeah, no.
Right. And it would involve 1,000 tangents. It would be better.
Stretch goal for Dave Gonzalez doing his best Jeff Goldblum impression, reading the entire script of Fallen.
What would a Goldblum tangent be here?
Yeah.
Oh, this reminds me of that time that Gina Davis and I were
yes,
in Budapest.
Yes. She told me smother me with a pillow like I'm an old man. And I said, that's odd, but I did it.
Okay. Now that we're deep into, can we be deep into spoiler territory? Cause I want to talk about the best moment in the whole movie.
Yes. Let's talk about a good moment in this movie.
The best moment in this movie does not involve a dinosaur. It involves two people. It involves Rafe Spall and James Cromwell. And
Rafe Spall, what the fuck was he doing in this movie?
So
terrible.
As we find out toward the end of the movie, Rafe Spall is really the bad guy. He's the one.
No. 15 minutes into the scene.
Yeah. Rafe Spall is the bad guy. He's taken this lovely rich man's entire fortune and sunk it into a really weird basement. And he's been outed by the little girl, and James Cromwell is confronting him, and he says, "Call the police." And he points at a phone, which is perfectly perched on a pillow like 5 feet away. So on the way home from this screening, my roommate Theo and I, who I told you was going to get a shout out, we want to see the version of that movie where they call the police. Because what the fuck are the police going to do?
Yeah.
It's dinosaurs.
Call the police.
So
they're going to be so mad that you have
also,
those genetically dinosaurs.
And also it's like they're clearly way out in like nowhere in like Northern California or whatever. So it's probably some like small town sheriff that's going to roll up, and it's going to be like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. He's going to be like, I don't want any part of this. So I think call the police one was like, okay, somebody's like J.A. Bayona as a director is great at creating mood. He's got some great shots in this movie. But even he knew that this was a silly situation.
Well, because Trevorrow wrote this movie, right? Anyway, Call the Police is my new high hide. High hide,
yeah,
which is my
call
favorite
the police
part
is
of the
new
Lazo.
High hide.
Call the police. Yeah, and then he just points to this like cordless phone that we have not seen the like of since like 1998 sit perched on a pillow.
Yeah, it's so great.
Maybe it was his daughter's phone.
Like any other other wronged person in cinematic history would have been like, how dare you? Or they would have like cried. But no, James Cromwell as Benjamin Lockwood just very calmly like, we need to get the authorities involved.
Also, why does he want to get the authorities involved, knowing what we know about his little girl at the end of this movie? Wouldn't like the goal be like to keep the police away from that compound at all costs because you're committing like, you know, crimes against humanity?
Lockwood is a complete retcon, right? Like, yes. Okay. Just making sure.
Well, he's a complete retcon in the sense that we've never heard that about Hammond having a partner before, but Hammond is an asshole, and this had to have happened a long time ago, and then he like just brought up human cloning, maybe, because there's no way that girl was made in 1993.
No. Like, she was made much later. Yes. Anyway, Dr. Henry Wu is back, and I hated
committing crimes against humanity.
I hated Dr. Henry Wu in Jurassic World because I just like didn't feel like he was that much of a villain in the original Jurassic Park, and so like to make him this weird megalomaniac like monster in Jurassic World really bothered me. But now that they like, you know, boiled the lobster, like got me, like turn up the water on that for me in Jurassic World, then I was just like here for him in this movie. I was like, this guy sucks. I love that he's back. The dumb facial expressions that these various dinosaurs make, especially it's like the pachycosaur, right?
The ram, the little ram guy.
Yeah, it's got it's a human. That's not a dinosaur. That's not an animal. And I guess that's the point at the end. I hate the ending of this movie, guys. I hate it so much. So many people are going to die because of what they just did.
I guess. Well, yeah, for sure. That like it's so frustrating, the choices that are made by the human characters at the end. Like if they don't all die in the next one, I feel like it's an injustice. But I guess the reason why I like where it ends is because it's finally giving us basically the movie that the third Jurassic Park movie that I always wanted but never got. Like Jurassic Park 3 is fine, but it's not like the Dinosaurs Escaped movie that like could have been in my head canon, I guess. So there's hope that there's like one more trick in the Jurassic Park toolkit, and it's dinosaurs living among humans. But also, you brought up
the burbs.
Well, the birds, sure. But you brought up Henry Wong, or Henry Wu, played by B.D. Wong. What I need in this third movie is for him to be spliced with a dinosaur.
Oh, my God.
So that we get a very Spider Gary Oldman situation at the end. Like he's shown up in both Jurassic World movies as the bad guy, and there's some, like, you know, obviously this has, like, genetic messing with dinosaurs and humans in this movie. I need that to come together in the third one.
Go through the
I think Neil, there's a very good chance that Jurassic World 3 will have those things. Maybe not specifically Wu, but dinosaur human hybrids.
I don't know. I feel like he's the right one.
Dave, remember when I said that to you at the Han Solo premiere? Go through the planet. You guys, if you're listening to this episode, I know for a fact that most of you didn't listen to the Lost World episode because we got stats. We know
Lost in Space episode.
We know what you listen to and what you don't listen to. You did not want to hear us talk about Lost in Space, but I urge you to go back.
But
in
it's
time
coming back. To us we're sneaking it into dinosaurs.
the Lost World in Space, because Go Through the Planet is an all-time great line, almost as good as Call the Police in High. <Yeah. so. laughs>
I would like to go back and talk about a point that Dave made. Sort of. This whole idea that, like, even though these movies aren't as good, for some reason we're still drawn to them. Because I think at the level they make these movies, dinosaurs will always be cool. Like, a cheap dinosaur movie can be cool or not cool. But, like, a Jurassic Park-level movie where they put that much money and that much creative and technical energy into making dinosaurs is always going to be something worth, like, how many of these movies would you go see? For me, that number is like a million. Like, they could make a million Jurassic Park movies, and I'd probably see them all. Because dinosaurs are cool. And I think that's the point. And there's very, you know...
Dinosaurs are cool, and that's the point?
Yeah.
This is like then now they become Transformer movies. You know what I mean? Like, and like, it wouldn't bother me if it didn't like have the origin in such a beautiful film.
Yeah. Well, and maybe it's something manipulative. Like every time they dabble into or they, you know, they stretch the score. Every time Michael Giacchino brings in a little bit of that John Williams score, it's like you have that emotional muscle memory where you're just like, yeah, I'm still watching Jurassic Park. It's not the same, but there's enough of that. Whereas like the Transformers movies, there's nothing particularly iconic about them. They've all been loud noise. So I think that there still is that emotional connection to like the core idea of Jurassic Park.
Well, like you asked me sort of like, or you said like, how many of these would I watch? I'm being very honest with you and with you guys, dear listeners. I would not have seen this movie, were it not for this podcast. I was like, oh, can I just skip it? And then you guys were like, no, we're doing an episode about it. So I was like, oh, okay.
But all right. Here's a better question, because I feel like we're just on different levels here. How many more of these movies would you allow Dave and I to force you to watch?
maybe Theo wants to be on the next one. I'm really mad about the dinosaurs being out in public. It's making me really mad.
That I think is where our two roads diverge.
Yeah, our roads diverge on the strip of Vegas, I guess.
This just makes me also think that what I was always waiting for the Alien franchise was to get to Earth so we could fucking deal with that, and that never happened. Well, okay, it did happen in Alien versus Predator Requiem, which actually takes place in Colorado, but then they nuke part of Colorado off the planet, so I always felt that was a weird way to deal with it. Anyway, point being, you only need one movie.
What you're saying is that Alien vs. Predator is not a serious part of that franchise.
Correct. We only need one movie where a T-Rex eats a dog. We already have it. We got it in 1997. It's going to be interesting to see what Jurassic World wants to do with both the dinosaurs being out and about that it throws up into the air and is definitely interested in, and the human cloning, which it kind of throws away, and I can't tell if it's interested in or just needed some way to let the dinosaurs out and not feel bad about it, because it certainly doesn't treat them like animals. Really,
also,
really crazy character work.
They just straight up stole that girl at the end, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Because like they're like, well, nobody knows about her, so
her legal guardian has been ripped into several pieces. We haven't talked about stealth T-Rexes yet.
Oh yeah.
And how many ooh, wait, I did this in the movie theater too, because I saw this with my snarkiest friend, so we were definitely talking through the movie. There was no one else in the theater, it was fine. Deus Rex Machina.
Yeah. So the T-Rex now can sneak up on people.
How many points do I get for that? Two?
Well, the T-Rex has always been pretty sneaky. That goes back to like the Lost World.
Yeah, and the T-Rex,
the T-Rex is not sneaky in the Lost World.
He sneaks up on like 100 people sleeping. And no, sticks
he doesn't
his face
sneak up
in
on
a
anybody.
Tent.
There's in giant puddle-sized rings and wakes up
he sneaks
Ian Malcolm.
Up.
But there's he doesn't wake up any of the people sleeping
guys,
within 10 feet of
guys,
the tent.
Guys.
Yes.
Guys. There's surprise T-Rex at the end of Jurassic Park, so it's canon, right?
Right.
You're like, "Oh no, raptor." It's a T-Rex,
right?
So,
Ninja
like,
T-Rex, like the T-Rex that can
that's
make
canon.
Cups of water vibrate, but you can't hear him when he's like 20 feet away.
But here's what I'm saying: you can have. I'm gonna let you have one T-Rex saves the day moment per film. Jurassic Park has one at the end. The Jurassic World, for however stupid it is, has that dumbass flare high-heeled chase thing for the T-Rex to save them, right?
Right.
This happens like 7 times in this movie, I think. And also, is the T-Rex getting smaller? It's smaller, right? Like when they're in the truck with the T-Rex, That's a small T-Rex.
No? It's a Pete Postlewaite sized T-Rex still.
I don't know. She's riding it like a rodeo
definitely,
bull.
Yeah, well, it definitely felt smaller.
You see him sitting right next to the bull T-Rex. That's the biggest T-Rex they've ever made. And he's just like sitting next to its head when it's like loaded up. And he's like, oh, my partner character who nobody remembered his name, but Vince Vaughn died.
Anjay?
RJ?
RJ?
I think it's RJ. Anyway. I think the
one guy that they left on guard who didn't see the T-Rex coming to the tent.
Right. Yeah, I think, I don't know, maybe the T-Rex is smaller. I don't know. Science is out the door. I miss scientists in Jurassic World.
I really miss scientists, I gotta say. Yeah, and all the Chris Pratt stuff doesn't work for me at all. So.
Oh, yeah, no human characters in this movie. Put some nice dinosaur characters.
Well, they almost had a pretty good arc for Bryce Dallas Howard's character. But
I'd like Bryce Dallas Howard in this movie.
But then they kind of blew it by the girl releasing the dinosaurs into the wild. Like, her decision at the end to kill them was profound to me. I was like, oh my god, they actually, like, someone finally learned their lesson.
Someone finally learned to let the dinosaurs die.
Right. It's like, we shouldn't have done this in the first place. We got to let this die. Like, we need to end this so that, like, we don't do something really terrible. Like, let them out into the world. And she was right. And then the little girl was like, but they're my family. Click.
I think you were like, hey, there are no human characters that we can, like, relate to in this movie. And I'm like, I was with a little girl. And then we found out she's
not human. Not human. Well, I mean, she is.
I like her. I
how much frog DNA does she have?
Did you see this the same day as Ant-Man and the Wasp?
No.
Okay, because that movie has a really charming little girl. I don't know where you're getting this girl was good.
I liked her.
I mean, she's fine. There's just nothing. There's nothing for her to do.
She's kind of creepy. So it explains her. Ending.
I thought the whole... Okay, so, like, first of all, someone told me... I forget who, but someone told me that they were going to, like... That in this movie, they redo the Lex and Timmy trying to close the, like, thing in the kitchen thing from Jurassic Park. And I was like... So I was like, oh, they redo that? Okay. So then I was watching the movie, and I was like, oh, it's this scene where Toby Jones is trying to close the elevator. And then I was like, oh, no, it's also the dumbwaiter. They did it twice. Yeah. But she's freaking out, and when she like comes out of it and she's like crying and so upset, and her grandpa's dead, who's also her dad, and she's a clone and she's freaking out. I thought she sold that really well. And I liked her watching the footage of Blue, and I liked her being all Harriet the Spy and being intrepid and like memorizing codes when Rafe's ball punches them into the wall and all that sort of stuff. I liked her. I like this clone.
She's
child.
Definitely smarter than Ted Levine's character, who is like Gennaro. No, what's the guy's name? Gennaro's the lawyer in the first one. What's the game warden's
name? He's not Muldoon.
He's like
Muldoon rules.
He's like Muldoon if he was super dumb.
If Muldoon were crap, he'd be this
right because he's like tough and he's got his guns and he's very rugged. And he's got the Ted Levine face all the time, and but he dies hilariously.
Muldoon was one of the only characters in Jurassic Park who had any respect for the dinosaurs.
That's true.
He respected their power and their intelligence.
I mean, I think everybody in Jurassic Park sort of respected. It goes back to Dave's whole treating them as animals thing, or my whole treating them as like natural nightmares thing. Muldoon.
Nedry tried to like play fetch with one. He's like, here, chase a stick. And Gennaro, I think Muldoon's the only one who died who had respect for them, because like Gennaro also did not have respect for them. So Gennaro and Nedry, disrespectful, deserved to die.
But in every sequel since, pretty much everyone is disrespectful. So we want all of them to die, which I think might be a problem.
It's a problem.
I definitely want more of these people to die. This idea that every movie we have to give Owen and Claire a new kid to, you know, make their lives complete. Not buying it the first time, not buying it the second time.
It's bad. My last question to Dave is, What did you think of all the like horror movie tropes? You know, because this becomes like basically a
monster in the basement movie.
House.
Yep.
Yeah.
Dumb thing to set up that this is the most sophisticated hunting creature soldier ever, and then have them twice hide less than 2 meters from its nose, and it be like, bleh? Is it under the bed cover? Is it under this statue? Where did everybody go?
I did. I will say there's
the smartest
like
the creature in the world loses a game of hide and seek.
Yes.
The part where they're hiding under the statue and it goes around the corner and Owen moves to like also shift around the corner and Claire's like, no, it's on top. I was like, okay, that's a clever girl, right? It hopped on top of the statue. It wasn't going to play.
Where you could smell everything.
Racing around the corner.
Supposedly, or you would think if it was hunting like an ant. Okay, what I would do to fix this movie is you start at the house. The girl's the lead character. It's a monster in the basement movie the whole time. Maybe Claire and Owen show up. Just fuck off island and then go a little bit further after the release.
But Dave, if you don't go to the island, how are you going to make people sad?
I mean, I think that that's the problem. This movie should have leaned into being a dumb monster movie. I mean, that's if there's anything redeemable about Jurassic Park 3, it's that it makes that decision and then sticks with it. And so you have things like the few things that work in that movie, like the cell phone being stuck in the Spinosaurus that one time and they turn around. It's just standing there waiting for them to run. Or it's kind of like, aha, the movie knows it's dumb. That it can go in that direction. This could be Tremors Bloodlines. It just decides it wants to be about animal preservation for half of it and it doesn't work.
Rafe Spall's a really bad, bad guy. The Indoraptor, one last horror movie question for you, Dave. The Indoraptor on top of the roof doing the like Wolfman pose.
Mm-hmm.
Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Thumbs down. The positive thing of that movie, that sequence for me is once Blue starts fighting the Indoraptor and they're actually on the roof and they just keep like popping, the dinosaur fight keeps popping out to different parts of the roof. That I'm like, make that the fucking water ride that I want to experience. Like, you know, you never know where these two things fighting each other are going to pop out. That's much more thrilling to me than there's a dinosaur monster that only has limited powers when we need it to.
But still not as good as the sequence where Julianne Moore falls off the roof and the two raptors are fighting next to her.
Where she falls her way out of the problem and it's
no,
like
no, this
literally
is before that. This is when she just falls off the roof and the dinosaur and the raptor falls onto the other raptor and they start wrestling. That is still one of my favorite scenes in that whole movie because like there's this like closeness and there's this like physicality to the raptors that I don't think you get in the bedroom scene, for instance, in Fallen Kingdom.
Well, so they're wrestling, which allows her to fall down two more times and through a fence where Ian catches her and says, we're out of it. It's just, it's really like, you're right, but it's also weird to that scene that she like falls out of the problem.
She falls on a light, which falls down and then she tucks and rolls out of a window.
Yeah, falls out of the danger zone.
What I'm saying is that the better part is before that.
Julianne Moore does do a lot of asking.
Oscar winner Julianne Moore.
She acts against a lot of nothing in that movie because that's where CGI was at the time. So yeah. All you people that are complaining about acting to tennis balls or Andy Serkis with dots on his face, talk to Julianne Moore about how it's done.
She's all like, right. I was doing Rube Goldberg escapes before they invented green suits.
You don't even know. Fall on the light from the ceiling. Roll out the window. Jeff Goldblum
roll
will catch you.
Roll out the window.
Gymnastics.
Yeah. All right. So we probably have Jurassic World 3. Colin Trevorrow's back. Well, his schedule freed up so he can now return to the franchise. Good luck, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Make it stupid. It's fine.
Yeah, you know what? The dinosaurs are out. Dinos in Vegas, directed by Colin Trevorrow. Yeah, please go ahead and book Theo now as your third co-host for that podcast. I will not be
here.
Aren't
you
just describing the
news.
Super Mario Brothers movie? All right. Guys, I think that's going to do it for Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. Neil, what's up for next week?
So next week, we're going to be getting bigger and smaller than dinosaurs, apparently. We will be talking about a movie that two out of the three of us will have seen by then, or have already seen, the latest Marvel adventure, Ant-Man and the Wasp. I can't wait to hear all about it and have you guys tell me all about it.
So I would say if you want to prepare for watching Ant-Man and the Wasp, you are going to want to watch Ant-Man and Civil War.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Ant-Man and Civil War. You don't have to watch Civil War, honestly. But you should maybe refresh yourself.
I did catch something in a trailer, the latest trailer, where like she mentioned something about like he keeps talking about it, like he keeps talking about the whole Avengers thing, and it's like annoying to her.
Yeah,
so,
I think I would watch Civil War. I don't know, why not? I think feels, it comes up.
Is it more than just like a side joke that he's annoying about it?
Yeah, it's more that it is more than that. Okay. It is important to like the character relationship, but like my bet is that people watch Civil War before Infinity War. So like you probably watched Civil War recently. Make sure you watch Ant-Man.
What we're trying to tell you very gently is this takes place before Infinity War, the majority of the movie. So all your snapping fears, you can leave them at the door. But definitely catch up on Ant-Man because it does a little bit to help you, but I feel like I would have like to have seen that going into it. Yeah. All right. So next week, getting small, Steve Martin style. Until then, guys, where can we find more of your work on the internet? Let's start with Mr. Neil Miller.
You get me over at filmschoolrejects.com and on Twitter at rejects. And don't forget to follow the show, of course, at Storm of Spoilers. Sign up for the Patreon, patreon.com/stormofspoilers, or email us your thoughts about Ant-Man and the Wasp, stormofspoilers@gmail.com.
And Joanna Robinson?
You can find me on vanityfair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at JoeWroteThis. I've got a bunch of other podcasts going on right now. Little Gold Men is one of them on vanityfair.com, or you can listen to Still Watching : Sharp Objects, where Richard Lawson and I of Vanity Fair fame will be covering the HBO series Sharp Objects, which was our June book for the Storm of Spoilers Patreon. So, gonna get Southern, gonna get Gothic, gonna get murdery. It's gonna be fun.
Make sure to also check us out at patreon.com/stormofspoilers, where you can get the Slack at one level. You could get a bonus podcast at another level. This week, we're going to be talking a little bit more about Westworld in case you haven't gotten sick of hearing us talk about that. And then, of course, Movie Club. If you want to be part of next month's Movie Club /Lightwatch, you could also join up there. That's patreon.com/stormofspoilers. I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. I'm at Thrillist.com talking about various pop culture things. I think I'm going to try to figure out a way to write about Star Wars theme park rides. I think that's the kind of geekery I want to get into right about now. So definitely check me out there. Check me out at Polygon.com. Check us out all the time and stay upright as you don't fall down in 2018.
I want to tell you about Texas Radio and the Big Beat. Comes out of the Virginia swamps, cool and slow, with plenty of precision, and a backbeat narrow and hard to master.